and he went into the bathroom, and then on the walls of the bathroom, there are footprints on the walls. Footprints on the walls, like, leading up to kind of like a hatch in the ceiling.
Yo, sucker! You got a big mouth! Flip out! I said,
everyone, welcome to episode 7 of the Mr. Baby podcast. This week we have a pretty special guest, a friend of ours, Alec Odahara, and he told us some great stories about living and working in Japan and the different industries he kind of fell into, some unwanted house guests in Malaysia, and of course, he couldn't leave without telling us about how he's a Chinese television star. Alex, as you'll find out, has been for 3 years now star on a Chinese talk show called Informal Talks. I won't try the Chinese because I'll butcher it. And Alex represents England on a panel of international guys that talk about current events and other personal things. So enjoy these stories, and here's episode 7. Going to tell us a little bit about himself. So, Alec, let's start off with a 60-second life story.
Okay, 60-second life. I'm fairly well practiced at this because I get asked a few times. So, born in the UK when I was a baby, I moved to France. After France, for a year, I moved back to the UK. When I was 6 or 7, I moved with my mom and my stepdad to Malaysia for 4 years, then Scotland for 1 year, then Malaysia for 1 year, then Australia for 4 years, then England for a couple of years, Japan for 1 year, and then since then it's been back and forth between England and China.
All right. What caused you to move around so much? I would assume your parents work.
Yeah, they're drug dealers. We're always running from the police. You know, it's a tough life, but someone's got it. No, just because of, well, partly it's a different reason every time. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's work, sometimes it's just habitual. Because my mom, she had a similar kind of growing up. So it's very easy for her to say, oh, let's move across the
tired
side of the world.
This place.
Exactly. So when we were in Malaysia, the reason we moved to Scotland was because mm-hmm. my mum, she kind of just wanted to move back to the UK, and my dad was in Scotland. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's kind of a bit weird. But then she was like, yeah, let's move back to Scotland. And then we're there, she hated it, so she's like, nah, that's what So it's very, I think, whereas people who don't have that kind of background, mm-hmm. it's a really, you know, it's a big deal to move to another country or even like another city in the same country. But my mom's used to that. So she just kind of, it's not a, yeah. So partly it's personal like that. Sometimes it's because of job stuff. So
yeah. Yeah. We had a previous guest who talked about a bit of like, once you start moving around, you kind of just get the wanderlust. Like every couple of years, like, I think I'm just done with this city. Like,
it's funny because to me and my brother, obviously, you know, we had the same upbringing. I love moving around and I've kind of done that, and there's so many countries. The list of countries I want to live in is so long. Whereas my brother, he just wants to, like, now he lives in Australia. He doesn't want to live in Australia. He's going to stay there forever. That's his home. He's not interested in anywhere else.
Yeah. I have the same with my brothers. My oldest, I'm the youngest of three, but my oldest, he moved to Dubai for work after university and then lived in Egypt for a bit. And he hasn't moved around much after that, but like travels versus my other brother, like,
yeah,
not leaving the States very much. Like maybe a little Europe, but like I was talking to someone, they're like, "Oh, your brother's visited China." I was like, "My one brother did. My other brother doesn't plan to."
It raises really interesting questions. Like, is it that genetically me and my brother are just different, so we're just genetically inclined to different ways of living, or is it that? And this is what my mom thinks. In our youth, in our childhood, was there something which happened to my brother or happened to me, which just kind of changed the course of my personality?
That's what I actually think. My brother's similar. Like, he was definitely the most popular of the three, like in high school, like much more like the popular guy, whereas just like me and my oldest were not as much. So, or more open to like, you know, he always, like, when my parents sold their
our childhood home. He was like, oh, I can't. He was like so heartbroken. Like, we'll never be able to go back there. Like, oh, I wish, like,
that's
like, you know, he barely wanted to move out of there.
Your eldest brother is the one who has stayed in the States and isn't really interested.
No, the middle one. The middle one. My oldest one was the one.
He likes traveling.
Yeah.
That's kind of similar then, because with me, I found it easier to make friends whenever we changed schools.
Mm.
So I didn't dread moving, because I was like, oh, well, I'll just make new friends, it's fine. Whereas my brother, he had a tougher time. So for him, it was kind of being ripped away from friends who he'd, like,
yeah.
who he'd just made, and then having to kind of work at making, yeah, so maybe there's a bit of
similarity. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, not bravery per se, but just, like, you're not afraid of having to extend yourself again, or, like, kind of adapt to a new place.
Kind of a confidence thing, or, I suppose it's just outgoing versus introverted.
Mm-hmm.
And same with my mom and my aunt, my mom and her sister. My mom kept moving around, my aunt, not, and even like when she goes on holiday, she has very safe holidays.
Yeah.
You know, which are places which are kind of close to the UK, or, you know, English speaking, she's not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my mom like wants to go everywhere, and it's kind of a bit crazy.
Challenge.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
So yeah, now that you're grown and you can move around by yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been in China for quite a while now.
On and off since 2009, so for, my gosh, 8 years, for a total of about 4 years, added up about 4 years, but on and off. I was in Beijing before, for about 3 years, and then now I've been in Shanghai for just over a year. And yeah, China's a great place. Whenever I leave China and go back to the UK, I just find myself kind of a bit bored. Like, it just kind of feels much more static.
Yeah.
Whereas in China, I appreciate how fast things move, and you kind of really feel the economy kind of moving and churning, and things are changing, and there's all this technology, and people get excited about technology, like Alipay and WeChat and all these cool things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the UK, like, nothing much really changed over the past 10 years, it's just kind of stayed the same.
Yeah. Mm. So, Alec, you are fluent in 3 languages.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're half Japanese.
Quarter Japanese, yeah.
Quarter Japanese. Mm. And then the rest is British.
Yeah, European.
Okay.
Right.
So you speak Japanese and Chinese.
Yeah.
But you didn't learn either of them growing up.
No. So when I was... when I was a kid... So I lived in France, but then I was too young. I didn't even speak English, so I didn't learn any French there. And then in Malaysia, we went to a British school... a lot of Malaysians don't even really speak Malay that well. And also, when I was in Malaysia, I remember very distinctly being like, I don't want to learn Malay. It's not a proper language. I want to learn French.
Wow.
And then later, I really regretted it, because I was like, if I'd learned Malay then, like, I was in the perfect environment. I could have learned it really well. But no, I didn't. And then it was when I was about 13 or 14 that I started learning Japanese at school. And it was kind of because I kind of wanted to connect with Japanese relatives. My mum doesn't speak any Japanese. I thought it was kind of a shame. So I started learning Japanese. And then...
was it your mum who was half Japanese? Or your
mom? My mum's half Japanese, yeah. And then when I was 18...
Can you see that lovely anime portrait of her?
And then when I finished high school, when I was 18, I went and lived in Japan for a year, which helped me kind of improve my Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what's next? Let's learn Chinese. So university, that's where I learned Chinese. I have a bit of Italian. Now I want to start learning Korean. So the list of languages I want to learn is just as long as the list of countries that I want to live in.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's really cool. I guess the first time we met and I heard you speak Chinese, I was like, oh, wow. Like, I don't know. It's great that I was kind of like, how did you get like so well-versed in it.
Mm.
I was quite intimidated until our mutual friend Lillian told me that you never showed up to Chinese class in university.
Right, yeah. Well, I think... I mean, I don't want to discourage all the students out there who are working very hard. Classes are important, but I kind of think you learn so much more just speaking with people. So even like my first year of university, my progress in Chinese was it's kind of relatively slow compared to some people. But then when I made it to China, first I arrived a few months earlier than other people. So everyone else kind of arrived at the end of the summer. I don't know why. For me, I was like, I'm so excited to go to China. So for me, first day of summer holidays, to explain, our second year of university, we have to do a year in China.
Mm.
So for me, the first day of the summer holidays before that, I was like, in China, I'm like, I'm going to go, I'm going to hang out the whole summer, it's going to be great. Everyone else kind of like, well, okay, let me have fun first, and then I'll go when I have to. So I had the whole summer by myself. My classmates hadn't arrived yet.
Had you been to China before?
Nope. I'd been to Hong Kong. I'd never been to mainland China. And yeah, I just hung out this summer, and I kind of made some friends. And I just kind of hung out with them, and they were very kind of patient with me, and they didn't really speak English. They just kind of wanted to hang out. And then I had a flatmate, and she's really interesting. So she's an actress, and in China, as you probably know, actors and actresses have to speak very, very standard Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like in the UK where you can have like different regional accents, mm-hmm. whatever. In China, you have very so she'd studied like so she had super, super standard good Mandarin, and she was a friend of my friend. And so he introduced us, and he was like, oh, she's looking for a flatmate, you're looking for a flatmate, why don't you live together? And she didn't speak any English. She wasn't interested in learning English, which was the most important thing.
Yeah.
She couldn't care less about English. And she was just kind of helping her friend by being like, yeah, sure, whatever, okay, I'll live with Alec. So there'd be the three of us, me, my friend, who's Chinese, but he lives in the UK, so he speaks really good English, and then her, who hasn't really traveled overseas that much.
Mm.
And she's like, we would be speaking, and I'd only been learning Chinese for about a year at this point. And, you know, I had a bad accent, I had limited vocabulary, and I was thinking in an English kind of mindset.
Yeah.
And then I would say something, and then my friend, who I suppose understood my English way of mm-hmm. expressing whatever, he would kind of be like, okay, yeah. And then she would just be like, no, what? I don't understand. Say that again. What? And she was like, she wasn't even... And before China, I lived in Japan for a year. So in Japan, if people don't understand you, they'll pretend they do understand you.
They'll try. They'll
just be like, okay, even though they haven't... Whereas... This was my first experience of someone just being like, no idea what you're saying. No, what? I was like, oh, okay. And then we had to find a flat to go. So we went flat hunting. And then we found a place. It was good. And then she was like, okay, I've got to go back to Shanghai. This was in Beijing. So she's like, I've got to go back to Shanghai. But you meet with the landlord and you sign the contracts and everything. Okay, bye. And then I was like, I've only been studying Chinese for a year. You want me to sign the contract? So I went by myself to meet with the landlord with like my 1 year's worth of Chinese under my belt, and I'm like, yeah, so show me that contract. And I was like, oh my god, he's totally gonna like write in some ridiculous clauses. I'm gonna be signing.
She's
my
gonna
life
come out. Like, what'd you do? It's like, what'd you do? You left me here.
Exactly.
This is on you.
I was like, this is really irresponsible of you. But luckily he's a film director. The landlord was a director. And he acted out the whole contract for me.
Oh my god.
So I wish this was a visual medium. I could do a better job. But so, for example, there'd be a clause like if you break any furniture, you have to pay for it. So he would be like, if there's a table, and then he would kind of like act out the table, and you break it, and then he would like act out breaking the table, then you pay, and then you'd like point at me like, you know, with your money, cash, money. So he kind of acted out the whole contract. Yeah. So like an hour later, after going through, and he was very sweet and very patient, I managed to sign in the end. But
so that kind of brings back to what you said about like Japanese, because I lived in Japan briefly, did not speak very much at all, if any. But there was a lot of that. Like if they understood, I didn't understand, they would at least like try to like act it out or do something.
Yeah.
And then I would hear like barrel stories of living here, where it's just like you trying to yell the same sentence like a million times, and them scolding you for like not pronouncing it. It's like, just help me.
Yeah. Well, it's. I mean. I don't know which one's more helpful, because I found in Japan sometimes people would pretend that they understand when they didn't.
Yeah.
So in a way, like it was a kind of it took time to transition.
Or like they'll struggle to speak English. It's like, no, I should be struggling to speak Japanese. Like, stop helping me.
Or sometimes in Japan they'll just freak out and they'll be like, no.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out, because it kind of pushes you to.
Mm-hmm.
So after living with her, it kind of pushed me to like,
mm-hmm.
like kind of. Like, okay, everybody...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think living with somebody or dating somebody in a different language, that's how you learn the fastest.
Yeah, exactly. So in class, we would, like, a lot of the other students in class, they'd go to class, they would do all their homework, and I wish that I was as driven in that sense. But I, to be honest, I just spent a lot of my time...
Mm-hmm.
Hang out at bars I shouldn't have been at, with people I shouldn't have been with.
No, I think, I mean, kind of what I've noticed from us working together is that you have a lot of, like, practical vocabulary. Like your personal trainer, like, that's in Chinese, right?
No, he's...
Oh, really?
It's in English.
Oh, I just assumed because Jenny and May went with you that it was in Chinese.
Oh, we went to a class downstairs.
Right.
That was in Chinese.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, some of the exercise names, like how things get... I can't even remember anything, but like things we call star jumps, they'll have
it. No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I think the first time I went to get a manicure in Chinese, I was like, oh... God, like, how is this not on the HSK?
Also, just the confidence to speak. I feel like that's a big thing. It's like, if you're sitting in class all day, you learn it all. Mm. But then when you have to actually go use it, you're not used to that. And that's like, I had a friend when I was in Japan, I was taking classes. A friend of mine who was kind of at the same level, like, study-wise, like, in class. But his girlfriend at the time owned a bar in Golden Guy. So he would hang out there, like, almost every night. Mm. And, like, which, for people who don't know, it's just a series of bars, like, teeny bars. So he would meet all these, like, bar owners and stuff. So his vocabulary was still total shit. But, like, he was a lot more confident and, like, stumbling through, like, his minimal, like... It's casual conversation.
Yeah, I mean, to say a word... So, I mean, that's my experience with Chinese. But then I also did have... You know, I also did kind of go to class and I learned, like, vocabulary. Whereas, like, my Japanese, on the other hand, I studied it in class and stuff, but a lot more of it was... So my Chinese, even though I did say I learned a lot of it socially, I still do, like, have a degree in Chinese, and I still had to, like, learn, like, words which you don't come into contact with just from chatting with people. Whereas a lot of my Japanese was just learned kind of on the job, so to speak, without actually sitting down with a textbook to the same extent.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel like my Japanese is good, like, accent and kind of culturally, but my vocabulary is, like, is missing a lot. And I can kind of talk around, a word if I'm missing a word.
Yeah.
But then I do have some friends who study Japanese more formally,
yeah.
and I kind of envy the vocabulary. So, I think you kind of need a bit of both.
Well, I also found a big roadblock in Japanese when you learn it in, like, a classroom versus... Yeah. There's certain, like, curriculums now and, like, casual is, like... They always teach you the, like, polite version of everything. And then you get into the real world and no one talks like that. Like, everyone talks casual and you're like, I don't know any of these words. It's like, you do. You just need to conjugate them in your head. It's like, no.
Well, that...
I don't know any of these. Yeah, you do. That means to go. It's like, oh, no, I do know that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but that's not what it sounded like.
Well, conjugations, yeah, they're like... That's one of the good things about Chinese. Because a lot of people are like, oh, my God, Chinese is so difficult. But actually, it doesn't have conjugation.
Yeah.
It makes it so much easier to speak. It has tones, which are difficult.
Yeah.
But once I feel like tones, once you get past that, then it's smooth sailing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice not to have conjugations. I don't know about
conjugations. Yeah. So you spent a year of university in China, and then after you graduated, you said you worked in Japan for a year.
After I graduated high school, I was in Japan for a year.
Oh.
Yeah, and then after Japan for a year, then I went back to... Then I started at university in the UK. So first year was in UK, second year of university was in China.
Mm-hmm.
Third and fourth year was in the UK. And then I graduated university, went to Beijing again for 1 year. Then I went to... Oh my God, this alcohol's giving me so many burps. So I was in China for 1 year, then I went to Hong Kong for about 6 months, back to Beijing for about 6 months. In the UK for a year and a half. Yeah, she's kind of been flip-flopping.
Are you even allowed to be employed when you're right out of high school?
In Japan, you mean?
Yeah.
I was on a working holiday visa.
So, oh my God.
Yes, I was legal. Thank you, Beryl. It's just as well I was.
No, I can't imagine I did any job or did it well when I was right out of high school.
So I was on a working holiday visa and I spent the first 3 months in Okinawa. Working in a beach resort in the souvenir store of a beach resort, which was beautiful. It was really boring living in the middle of nowhere in Okinawa. Mm. Like, it's great if you're a tourist, you go to this beautiful beach resort in the middle of nowhere for a week. But living there, originally I was supposed to be there for 4 months, and then it just got like there was nothing to do.
Yeah,
except for like work, go home and sleep.
Did you know anybody? Like, where did you live?
Well, it was a program. It was a program for foreigners who want to work in Japan. Foreigners who are on working holiday visas who want to work in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So they match you up. If you go in the summertime, they match you up with hotels in Okinawa. If you go in the winter, they match you up with ski resorts in Hokkaido.
Huh.
And then according to your Japanese level, they match you up. So if your Japanese is really good, they'll put you at front desk. If your Japanese is not so good, then you can be a bellboy. And then there's different kind of gradients in between.
Mm-hmm.
So I was put in the gift store, which was kind of like medium level.
Yeah.
So there was like... And we were the first intake into Okinawa because they used to only do Hokkaido. And there was about 10 of us from Australia, New Zealand, Germany, yeah, just a bunch of countries which have working holiday visas.
Was the resort just very secluded or...?
It wasn't super secluded. I mean, it wasn't in Naha. It wasn't in the biggest city in Okinawa. Yeah. It was kind of in a touristy, kind of beachy kind of area. The thing is, though, in Okinawa, if you rely on buses, the bus comes like once an hour because most people drive.
Yeah.
And it was like a big hotel, but it was just, it's not like living in Tokyo where you're surrounded by stuff. You can just walk out and do stuff, and meet people. You're kind of just stuck.
You better love going to the beach.
Yeah, even that would have been better, except for the fact that there's so many jellyfish in Okinawa at certain times of the year. So like half of the time we were there, we couldn't go into the water. And then like sometimes it was too cold and... Yeah, no, it was great. It was great for like the first month. Yeah. And after that it was like, yeah, okay, I'm kind of done. But no, it was very peaceful.
Did it become just you and the other expats just finding ways to entertain yourselves?
Well... It depends on person. So some people, especially Australians, like they love that shit. So they're like, "Oh, great, just drink every day, go to the beach." Like they're in their, they're in their zone.
It's their wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas for me, I kind of, I'm more of a city boy. I like the city, so I like the beach, but not for that long. So a lot of them, they would enjoy getting drunk.
Well, that's like even on a daily scale, not even months. I can't imagine. But I have a best friend who's from the shore, and so we'll go to the beach. It's like, let's go up to the beach because he has a house. And it's like, okay. And we're there for like an hour. And it's like playing the ocean a little bit. And it's like, all right, we're going home now. And it's like, no, we're just going to sit here. And he'll just sleep on the beach for like 5 hours. How do you do this? I'm so bored. Yeah. I need to go back to the house.
No way. My mom is from Hawaii.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I was such a spoiled brat. I used to beg her to take me to the pool. Because, I like to play at the beach. And then I'd get sand everywhere, in my suit, and blah, blah, blah. And then I'd open my eyes underwater. I was not good at it, basically. I remember, 5 years ago, we went back together. And we went to the beach, and, we were supposed to be spending quality time together. And I passed out in the sun. And I woke up a couple hours later and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Ma. I know we were supposed to be hanging out and, catching up. And she was like, Beryl, what do you think you're supposed to be doing here? I was just oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were on city schedule. My bad.
That's why I'm like, so were we doing something? It's like, no, this is what we do here. We sit and do nothing. We enjoy it. It's like, no, can't do that.
It's kind of enviable in a way, but...
You also get burnt real bad, so it's not fun for you.
I also just get bored.
I have kind of a beachy holiday at the end of this month. We'll see how I go. I think as I get older, I enjoy more just kind of sitting and doing nothing. Which is just as well, because I have less energy as I get older.
Have you been back to Okinawa since then?
Yeah, I went back last October for National Day. It was really nice.
Did you go back and visit the resort?
I did, and there are still some people working there. Not the foreigners. The foreigners have all left, but the local Japanese, some of them working there for 20 years. So. and the hotel's kind of changed a bit, but nothing has really changed that much. Okinawa's a sweet place. It's just it's a nice place. The food's really nice. I enjoyed it. So I was in Okinawa. And then after that, I moved to Tokyo. So I cut my contract short. Originally, I was 4 months. I cut it short to 3 months. Moved to Tokyo. And then that's where I was this is where I should be.
Tell us a little bit about your time in Tokyo.
So I lived in Shinjuku, right next to Kabukicho, the red light district. And I loved it. I love Shinjuku so much. And Kabukicho is one of my favorite places in the world. Not because it's the red light district. Well, partly, but not...
Though it is a red light district,
it's tame.
It's way more pedestrian friendly than what you're picturing in your head when people say red light district.
For any listeners who are listening and thinking hanging out in some seedy, really nice. Yeah,
it's much more of a fun neighborhood.
It's a cool, fun it's a pretty family friendly neighborhood. It's Japan. Some of my Japanese relatives were like, oh my god, Kabukicho, oh my god, it's so dangerous. And I'm like, please, it's safer than anywhere in London. So I lived, sorry to disappoint you, I didn't work in the red light district. But I first went and I worked in an Italian restaurant. So I didn't have any job lined up. I just turned up and I was interviewing with places. I interviewed for Zara. And I remember, so I handed in my application, then I got called to go to the head office for an interview. And it was kind of a group interview. And then I went up and I waited in the meeting room, which someone told me to wait in for this group interview. And I was there for like half an hour and no one was coming. I didn't know it was a group interview. I was waiting for like half an hour and no one came. And then I walked out and I'm like, excuse me, what? Anyway, I was in the wrong room. Like, the next door to my meeting room was this big group interview. And I'm like, is this our group interview? And they're like, anyway. So that didn't go well. I think my Japanese wasn't good enough, which is, like, looking back, yeah, my Japanese was. So after that terrible interview, I was like, yeah, this isn't happening. So I just kind of walked around Tokyo, like, taking notes of all the, like, wanted job ads.
Sure.
In store windows and restaurant windows.
At the time, were you looking for, like, full-time employment or just, like...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have anything. Time. Yeah, I mean, I need to support myself. So.
Yeah,
just full time.
So you were there, like, planning to stay beyond your holiday?
Well, so my working holiday was for a year.
Oh, okay. It's for a full year.
So it's a year. I was planning on staying there for a full year because I needed to be there for a whole year anyway before university started.
Yeah.
And I wanted to improve my Japanese and blah, blah, blah. So I was taking notes of all the places where I might be able to get a job and then passed this Italian restaurant. Which said they were looking for waiting staff, but they didn't have a telephone number or any contact details. So I went in and I'm like, excuse me, if I want to work here, who do I speak to? And the owner like dragged me aside, spoke to me for two words, and he's like, great, you start tomorrow. And I'm like, wait, I don't know anything about this job, like how much you pay, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you start tomorrow, see you tomorrow, okay, bye. And it was great. And
so you worked in pasta.
Sorry?
Did they pay you in pasta?
Well, they paid me in cash as well as pasta. So I put on so much weight for the first couple of months. And then I had to stop with the pasta and, like, start having salad and stuff. But,
Oh, no. Did you hit 100 pounds, finally?
100 pounds? What's that in kilos?
Don't know.
Isn't a stone, like,
20
pounds?
Oh, my gosh.
I would say on a weekly basis, somebody asked me about centimeters, kilograms, or Celsius, and I still have yet to learn them.
But the whole... Anyway, we can...
I'm well aware. We had a class the other day, we were learning it, and it's just me and two French guys are just laughing at me, because I'm like, nope, don't know it. And they were like, you realize you're the only one. It's like, oh, I'm well aware. I never said I don't support... the metric system. You still do not know the metric system.
I want to say it's like 70 kilos.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's wrong. Because I'm 82.
You're 82?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's 180.
Okay.
So.
That's wrong.
Much less.
So I'm probably 100
pounds. Like a preteen girl.
A preteen girl.
Probably like 50 or something. 50 to 60.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
Anyway.
Anyway. Yeah, and it's interesting, like, it's a good place to learn Japanese, because as you know, Japanese, a lot of it is, there's, like, politeness levels is really important, so it was a good environment, because in a work environment, you really understand how different people are supposed to speak to different people, how I'm supposed to speak to my superiors, how they speak to me, and even things like, I remember I would sometimes be late, when I say sometimes, I mean usually, and once I was late by a couple of hours. And I remember, like, one of my superior, I didn't say boss, because he was my boss, but he was my superior, and he was, like, hitting me around the head in front of the customers. And I was like, this would never happen in the UK. But in Japan, it just kind of felt like, okay. Like, he's beating me up in front of the customers. And that's cool. But it was a fun restaurant. And then I got another job at a Japanese izakaya, a Japanese restaurant. And on my first shift, and that was, so in the Italian restaurant, I had an advantage in that if anyone asked me about food or if they asked me about anything or whatever, I could just be like, I'm Italian. Like, so I would just kind of play the like, I'm Italian card and then like all would be forgiven. Or most of the time, I didn't even need to say anything. People just assume that I'm, you know, so they're kind of, you go to an Italian restaurant.
The white guy in the Italian restaurant.
Yeah, you gotta be Italian. Even if my Japanese isn't great, like, it's forgiven because, like, I'm giving them an authentic experience. But then in the Japanese, like, sticking me in a Japanese restaurant, then I was like, oh shit, like, this is, like, real now. And on my first shift, we had a customer, she ordered hot pot, and then she asked me some questions about how we're supposed to be eating. So I'm like, the sauces, or how do you do this, or whatever. And I'm like, I don't really know. One second, let me just check with my manager. And then she complains to the manager, and she was like, why do you have this like foreigner working here? Like, he doesn't even know about Japanese food, blah, blah, blah. Like, and I was like, anyway, so that was really discouraging. But I picked myself up, and I made it work. So, yeah.
Where are your relatives from in Japan?
Osaka, which is not my favorite city in Japan.
Really? Why?
It's just kind of industrial and kind of... I don't know. Maybe because I lived in Tokyo, so I know it's not... No. It's kind of industrial. I don't really know what it's about.
I see.
Tokyo, there's just so much... it's just industrial and kind of gritty.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The pace of it seems like more laid back than Tokyo, though.
But I don't know if I like that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's definitely like the dirty little brother of Tokyo. Like.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know what... I really like... I love Tokyo, and I love Kobe. Mm. Have you been to Kobe?
No.
Kobe is really nice. Kobe is... You know how a lot of Japanese cities are just kind of gray and kind of concrete?
Uh-huh.
Kobe is actually pretty. Like, Kobe is actually quite nice by Japanese standards. It's actually quite attractive. Yeah, and the reason... It's an unfortunate reason, but apparently it's because of the 1996 earthquake in Kobe. It kind of destroyed everything, so they built everything up again.
Mm.
So it's just... So I think it's just kind of, you know, you don't... I don't know, it just feels a lot nicer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's close to Osaka.
Hmm.
So that's what I did in Japan. Japanese restaurant, Italian restaurant. And then occasionally I tried to do some, like, entertainment-y kind of stuff.
What kind of entertainment stuff?
Red Light District.
Red Light District.
Yeah. Like,
well, close to it.
Yeah.
How many Street Sound magazines would you say you're in?
How many what? Streets? No, not Streets Out.
Streets
No. I was in Uniqlo T-shirts catalog.
Oh.
Yeah. I wish I had that.
Mr. Big Shot over here.
No.
Did you hear that Fruits stopped publishing?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I never. Yeah. I was. I. Yeah. I always liked Men's Nono when I was a kid. Do you know the Japanese?
Oh my god, yeah.
When I was a kid, I would save up for Men's Nono.
That's so weird.
In the UK, it's so expensive. Like, it's imported. And then, yeah, so I always save up for Men's Nono. But,
How would you describe it? It's not like a GQ, per se. It's kind of like a younger audience.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what, teenagers, university students. Yeah, like people in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Fashion, but Japanese fashion magazines are much more. It's like men's fashion magazines are about fashion,
mm-hmm.
whereas I feel like Western men's fashion magazines, like they'll do like a big thing about cars, and then they'll do something about mm-hmm. like watches.
It's a lot more like men's magazines that it has like a little
lifestyle.
Fashion to it. Yeah,
yeah. I think they're kind of embarrassed about being like all about, or maybe the market's not big enough. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's not enough diversity.
Mm.
I mean, because most GQ, it's like it just ends up being kind of the same thing. Like suits or like boat casual.
Yeah. So many
like
suits.
It's basically J. Crew or suits. Like
so many suits. Like
because I don't think people go out of like in Japan. Obviously, the men's fashion is way more broad.
Yeah,
it goes out of the standard.
Yeah.
A lot more. So there's a lot more things like Popeye and like you know they're not like crazy like Fruits, but it's still like somewhat different.
I don't understand like show. Some men's magazine that you know publishing every month and every issue will have something about. Like suits, what suit you need to wear.
Yeah.
It's like, how many suits can, like, how much suit advice can one magazine give? Like, suits are pretty much
But
the
that's
same.
Also, like, for most guys, the only, like, fashion outlet they have is, like,
yeah.
They think, like, wearing an interesting suit is, like,
yeah.
going out of the mold. Like, yeah, I wear vests and pocket squares. It's like, all right, good for you. Like
buy a flannel shirt that's fitted.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. I think that's why also like Bespoke does so well because it's just like it's the same shit. You can just feel like you're more like I'm fashion forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because I got this shirt custom made. It's like that looks like a J. Crew shirt. Like you're not breaking out of any mold.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Like you know, like when you see the photos from like the Met Ball or whatever, and I'm like all the it's like the Met Ball, and then all the men are kind of in the same thing, and everyone's just kind of wearing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But Japanese pop stars, you don't feel like that's the same.
I don't know. To be honest, I don't even follow fashion that much.
But I mean, even all the like modern, like Western streetwear now, that's like big in like hip hop and urban culture. It's all came from Japanese and Asian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Asian. Like it was not like they, I mean, some of it they like tweaked, but for the most part, they're like interesting shapes and like, you know,
right.
all came from Japan, where it's a lot more, it's easier to like, again, not wear like a normal fitted pant and a suit. Like, you know, you can kind of get weird with it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, like all these, like how these, you know, style and culture and everything just kind of gets bounced back between the two. So obviously there's like those American influences, which then Japan takes in and then they kind of adapt and whatever.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
if, as you say, like then hip hop culture kind of takes that back. It's a beautiful thing to watch. But yeah, fashion, huh? So when I was, one of my favorite things I did in Japan was, I think it's kind of funny, but do you know the French director Gaspar Noé? So he did a film Enter the Void in Tokyo. And have you seen it?
No, I've heard the story before though.
Oh, you have? So there's this French director Gaspar Noé.
Yeah, I know the film, I don't know.
Okay, so he did this film Enter the Void. And I auditioned for it for like the brother of the lead actress or something. Like it was quite an important part. And then I met with Paz de la Huerta, the lead actress, who said I was very pretty. but in the end, I didn't get it because they gave the part to a Japanese kid, and then they were like, get a Japanese guy to do it. But then they called me back.
Discrimination.
Yeah.
Discrimination.
The Japanese taking all the white roles in Japan.
Stealing our jobs.
Yeah. See, we do it in America, they do it in Japan. It's like, yeah.
But like then the casting woman called me back and she was just really, she's like a nice woman, like a 40-year-old Australian sweet woman, kind of like an auntie or like a teacher kind of type. And she was like, oh, sorry about that role, you know, we gave it someone else. But there's another role, it's kind of a featured extra role, but we think you'd be good for it. So tell me what you think. So we're having this rape scene in an elevator, a gay rape scene in an elevator. What do you think? And I was like, I mean, now, like, yeah, sure, go for it. But at the time, I was 18, I was so young, and I was like,
What's that?
Like, this is a movie, right? Like,
my mom told me.
I don't
me
see that. Any cameras. starting to regret my decisions.
But you know, the reason why I rejected it is because I thought there's no way that I can shoot a film with Gaspar Noé and not tell my mom, like not share it with my mom. But I do not want to share with my mom.
Such a catch 22.
Yeah, me being raped in an elevator. So I was like, what's a boy to do? So I had to say no, just because I was like, it's not, because I couldn't keep that a secret from my mom. But then, yeah. Where it's funny, because now I would have done it. Like now I think I probably would have shared with my mom. Like, would have so I kind of regret it. That could have been my, like, road to fame and fortune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows how many rape scenes could have opened up to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Could have been typecast.
Oh, my God. You gotta get Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a gay rape scene coming up in the film?
I know a guy. He's your man. Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah.
an adult winner.
No, internationally.
Staircase? Well, he's better at elevators. I'm sure, he's adaptable.
I've seen his work in elevators. Maybe we can figure it out.
Yeah. That's crazy. Were you ever kind of stopped in the street?
Well, I never did it. I said say no.
No, I know.
Well, how'd you get the Uniqlo t-shirt catalog?
What
year was that, by the way?
2007-8.
Okay.
Yeah, 2008, I think.
You might have had that t-shirt catalog.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because, I mean, obviously we were in a program with
we
lots
there,
of
well.
Other foreigners. Mm-hmm. But... quite often they would, they scout for foreigners on the street.
Yeah, how did I can't remember, I think I was signed up with a couple of small agencies. I can't even remember so long ago. But the Gaspar Noé film, I was in it. I did get in it, not in a gay rape elevator scene, but I was making out with a dominatrix in a club. So
much more tame.
Much like more family friendly,
yeah.
Something I can share with my mom. Maybe she could relate to, maybe we could have like bond over it, right? And then we were making like conversation in between takes. And I was like, oh, so what do you do? She was like, I'm a dominatrix.
Oh.
She was a dominatrix in the film.
No, the actress was a dominatrix. She was a dominatrix in real life. And she's like, yeah, that's my boyfriend over there. I'll introduce you in a bit. And I'm like, oh, hey. I'm like, I'm a waiter.
Was she Japanese or Western?
She's a Japanese, like, 35-year-old dominatrix. And I was this innocent 18-year-old waiter from an Italian restaurant. Yeah, I never got her number. But... yeah, I've never even seen the film. I should see that film.
Yeah. I never saw that either. I've seen it on Netflix a million times, but okay. Somebody told me it's not great, so.
Well, maybe because of the rape scene.
Wasn't did done he properly. Do that Ryan Gosling movie as well?
No, that's
somebody else.
Nicholas.
I don't remember. It was one that was very visually appealing, but I made it about 10 minutes and was like, all right, I'm over this.
Yeah. Mm. The guy who did Drive.
I'm not good at directors.
Okay.
Mm. That's all right. Yeah. So, you have one story you mentioned that we want you to bring up, which is...
this is a funny story. It's funny when, like, kind of weird things or surprising things happen to you. And then... they're really, when other people are like, oh my god, that's crazy. when it happens to you, and yeah. It's like all these years have passed, you're like, yeah, like,
yeah. Whatever. That seems to be a theme with us, talking to guests ahead of time, where we're like, yeah, tell some stories. Like, we don't have any good ones. Like, I'm sure you do. It's like, yeah. Well, this one time I got shot. It's like, yeah. Or like something that's like, yeah, that's a good story, I'm sure.
Right.
Were you much younger when this happened?
I was about 11, 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
So we were living in Malaysia, and we lived in this really big house. Not a mansion, but like a sizable house. You know, it's not Shanghai. And things would go missing. So my mom's like jewelry would go missing, or like cash from my mom's purse would go missing. Like things would disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom thought it was, you know, first of all, maybe we're not closing the doors properly at night, maybe people are sneaking in. So we'd like lock the doors, still kept happening. And then my mom was like, well, maybe it's my brother, because my brother was kind of going through a rebellious kind of weird mm-hmm. stage. So she thought it was my brother was like stealing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't my brother. And like, and things would just keep going missing. And then other weird stuff would happen. Sometimes we'd be watching, like sometimes in the morning we'd come down and there would be like cat piss on the kitchen counters.
What?
Yeah, like just weird, like... just, and we don't have a cat. Like, and we're like, how do they get in? Because at this mm-hmm. stage, we're like locking all the windows, yeah. Making sure we're like, you know, locked down. And then sometimes like we'd be watching TV or whatever, and you know, sometimes you feel like someone's watching you, and you feel like someone's there. So my mom would like turn around, there'd be no one there. But okay, at the time, you don't think much of it. So it's kind of weird. Like things would go well. So things would just go disappearing, and there'd be like cat piss on the kitchen counters in the morning, and we're like, "What's happening?" And then at this, my stepdad was away as well. He would mm-hmm. be away on work, so it's just me and my brother, who were kids, and then my mom. And then one morning, my brother woke up early, earlier than he normally did, and then there was kind of like a crashing sound from the toilet from our shared bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into the bathroom, and then on the walls of the bathroom, there are footprints on the walls. Footprints on the walls, like, leading up to kind of like a hatch in the ceiling. So of the bathroom ceiling, it's like a hatch which leads to the attic, but no one goes in the attic. And then the soap dish, which was kind of connected to the soap dish, had, like, smashed.
Mm-hmm.
But there are footprints on the walls! So we're like, what the fuck? So obviously, like,
I feel like that's immediate. One of those, like, nope, I'm out of here. Just like, don't even investigate. Turn around, walk away. Yeah, be like, nope.
Pretend I never saw it. Exactly. So like, we wake up and we're like, oh, well, that's strange. Why are there footprints on the wall?
He didn't wake everybody up when this happened.
He did, yeah. So so we all woke up and then we're like, ah. And, so it turned out that we had witch doctors sleeping in our roof, and. So,
did you go up there? I mean, how did you find out?
Well, we called the police, right?
Yeah.
So the police came around and they kind of explained, you know, the situation. And the police... So we had to, like, persuade the police to go up because the police didn't want to go up. They weren't having any of it.
They're equally like, no, I'm good.
Exactly. They were like, nah, it's fine. Just move house, you guys. They were not interested in going up. But then when they did go up, eventually, after, like, some cajoling and persuading and being like, hey, you know what? Maybe you should kind of protect us. after they did go up, they found like a mattress and like some cups and like, you know, they had a nice little setup in there. And yeah, and it's weird because sometimes we could hear like footsteps, but we thought it was monkeys because we had a lot of monkeys around the house and they would like run on the roof or whatever. So we didn't really think of it. So they would live in the roof and then they would come down at night, like steal stuff and then go back into the roof to go to sleep or whatever. What's the cat piss? The cat piss is because they believe that if you piss on someone's kitchen's counters, that makes you invisible. So, because sometimes they would come down when we were like up and about, apparently. Yeah. Like that must have been the case. Because, like, I don't know, but so piss on the kitchen counters, that's what made them invisible. And then, yeah, then they go back into the attic, go to sleep. And
this is a common thing that would happen in Malaysia.
Well, you get witch doctors. So my stepdad, he worked in...
Like they're rats. You get them occasionally.
Well, so my stepdad works in sports events. So he would organize cricket events and different like
international... Oh, yeah, you get witch doctors there all the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What?
We would ask them to come. We would ask witch doctors to come because they would do... they're called bomos. I think they're called bomos in Malaysia. And they would come and they would do a ritual so that it wouldn't rain. It wouldn't rain at the sporting venue. But it would rain around it. So, like, everywhere that wasn't the sporting venue would be raining. But the actual, like, sporting field would, like, be dry. Dry as a bone. So we would invite them. So, you know, they can be used for good or evil, depending on their...
Did he believe in it? Or was it kind of like a... It's just kind of par for the course because of the culture. Like, no one's going to do it unless this.
Well, as I remember, because I'm pretty sure it was my mom and my stepdad who would be like, yeah, if you do this, then it stops. So I think it's a bit of both. Yeah. They were like, it's kind of a custom, and also it works. But this is when I was... Like, yeah. I don't really...
Because my dad told me stories. He used to work in Japan in the 80s, and they worked at a company. They were like building a new building for them, and all the workers stopped construction because some weird things like were happening, and they were like, it's ghosts. They're not happy with you. Like, the building is haunted. And it's like... Yeah, no, we need to, like, finish this construction project. You can't just stop and they're like, no, it's ghosts. We know it's ghosts. We're not working unless you, like, hire this guy who, you know, coincidentally, the foreman knew and cost, like, $10,000 to come, like, clear the thing. So it's, like, this bizarre, like, I guess it's a scam and these people are actually haunted. It's like, all right, we'll get the ghost clearing guy to come in that, like, is a friend of yours and, like, pay him an asset to finish the project.
Oh, my God. Like...
I mean, similarly in China, you have to bring in a feng shui master before you start work in architecture. Like, a woman I used to know who did interior design here, she was Australian, and she was like, it's the biggest pain in my ass. She was like... No, like this, like the stairwell is here, so the door should be next to the stairwell. And he's like, nope, sorry. She's not good, can't do it. She'd just be like, no, just put a sofa here. That'll really like balance the room. And she's like, that's in front of the window. Like, you know, she'd just be like, none of that makes any sense. Like,
oh my God, that's
so... For the people living in the space.
Less cultural, but I mentioned before my brother worked in Dubai. And he worked he's an engineer on a construction site that was on the Palm Island. Palm tree island, and he used to have to deal with I don't know what it'd be like, environment like agencies that would like come check the sites, and he would always say like that was always the biggest pain because like already the like regulations are pretty lax because everyone wants mass profits, so they have like horrible conditions for workers. But it's like they would come and be like, oh, this dumpster doesn't have a cover on it, so we're gonna have to like shut down your whole thing because that's not safe for the environment. And he's just like, you literally built a fucking island and destroyed the coast. I'm sure that dumpster is not destroying the environment.
What is that, because they want a bribe, or what is that?
I think it's just like that's their job, so they have to like go down to the smallest detail. But it's just like, oh, really, like, come on, you're busting my balls here.
But I was reading in the UK, a lot of like real estate developers in the UK also pay attention to feng shui now.
Yeah,
because so many Chinese buyers.
That makes sense.
But I remember hearing about this foreign investor in Hong Kong, foreign or local, I can't remember, but he made a lot of money because in Hong Kong, like, houses where people have died or it's been murdered or whatever, no one wants to buy them.
Yeah.
Of various reasons. So the price is super, super cheap.
That's the same in Japan. They have, like, you have to give the age of the building and if there's any been deaths there.
So what he would do is he would buy it super cheap and then he would sell it to foreigners at, like, you know, a reasonable price for what it is if you're not superstitious. Yeah. And then probably just made so much money.
Well, that's kind of what you just said. Like, I'm sure that's happening with real estate in the you know, West for Chinese. It's just like, we're just going to make it appeal to you and
yeah.
sell the shit out of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It must have like such an...
So what happened? So the police cleared out these witch doctors from your roof?
Well, kind of, but you know, you never know when they're going to come back.
So did you stay there?
We moved.
Oh, God.
So we couldn't move out like that day. So we all, like me and my brother, slept in my mom's room. The three of us like huddled in my mom's bed, like shit scared, with the door locked.
Did you ever like,
see them?
See them? Yeah.
No.
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 Were they not up there when the police went, or?
No, I'm sure by that time they
figured it out.
They would have like run away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and then shortly after we moved to Australia.
Oh my God.
That was a weird place. Like I said, we had a lot of monkeys.
Uh-huh.
And they would kind of run around, and they would sometimes swing on the electric wires.
Mm.
And one monkey, he was swinging from like a tree opposite the road. He wanted to swing across to our roof or whatever. And he swung on the electric wire, but then he got electrocuted.
Oh my God.
If you touch one, it's okay, but I think if you touch two, you get
electrocuted. Yeah.
So he got electrocuted. But he was like hanging.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah.
He was hanging from the electric wire. Let me make this more vivid. If you can't see me acting up. So he was like hanging from the electric wires, facing my parents' bedroom, like staring at them, like staring just outside the window, like staring into the window,
yeah.
and like sizzling, and the smell of like cooked monkey filled the house. And the other monkeys,
what does cooked monkey smell like?
Like roast pork. I can't remember, but if you, yeah, like a bit of burnt hair, a bit of burnt hair, a bit of burnt meat. And the other monkeys, they thought that we killed him.
Oh my
God. And they would come onto our roof and they would like make like angry dances and like slam on our roof.
So
like,
you literally lived through Planet of the Apes.
Pretty much. So that
they killed one of our own.
So you can understand when we hear
that way, Sean.
So you can understand when we hear the witch doctors running around all over, we're like, ah, she's an angry monkey again. Yeah, but we were scared because monkeys can be scary. We had monkeys break in and steal food from our houses.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to Monkey Hill.
Monkey
in Kyoto,
Park.
Monkey Park.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's
like don't make eye contact.
Yeah,
there's all these rules.
Empty pockets, don't have like open bags.
Like monkeys are cute. They're not. They don't play.
Well, I was like at the very top of this like it's basically like a trail that goes up the hill, and at the top is like a little, I guess like station with caging, so you can like they'll crawl all over and you can feed them, and it'd be like, oh, little baby monkey, and you like tried to feed it, and like another one would like come over, like knock the baby over, like steal the food. Like, okay,
it's a lesson in life.
Yeah, it's like I just want to feed the baby monkey. That was vicious.
Oh no.
So I am also most interested in, because I don't know much about it, that besides working here, you have another side career. In Beijing.
I do.
On the weekends.
It's my, you know, backup career if advertising doesn't work out. So I do TV. I shoot some TV shows, do a bit of presenting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've been doing that since I first came to China, so like
2008. Yeah.
How did you get started in that?
So I've always had a bit of... I've always wanted to kind of do entertainment. So when I lived in Japan, I kind of did a bit. And then when I moved to China, I was kind of interested in opportunities. So I kind of had my radar out. And I, you know, I kind of been in contact with a couple of agents and whatnot. And my first gig was for CCTV.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's learning Chinese and watched this show, they might even know. It's called Changjiang Hang, Growing Up with Chinese on CCTV. I think they still show it. And I played a 16-year-old American captain of the rugby team, captain of the American football team, Mike. And he was living in China. And the show is like, you learn Chinese through Mike and his stories with his friends and blah, blah, blah. So I did that. And then I just kind of did little things and just kind of like loads of little things. This show that I'm doing now, though, I've been doing it for about 2-3 years. And they contacted me when I was back in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
They knew me from... another show, Chinese Bridge, Hangqiao, which is a Chinese competition for foreigners. So mm-hmm. they knew me from that, because in that I got I got like the grand prize for internet popularity or something.
What's the competition?
What's the competition?
I've never seen any of these shows. I don't know any.
I've definitely mentioned it to you before.
So there's an annual competition for students of Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of different ones for different types of students. So if you're studying in China, there's one. If you're like a primary school student, there's another one. But the biggest one, the one which people enjoy the most,
yeah,
is the one for people who are university students outside of China.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because it's shown on Hunan TV. Hunan TV is very good at entertainment.
Yeah.
So they make it into like a really entertaining thing. They bring in celebrities. They like crazy costumes. They like really make it like big and exciting and spectacular. So I was on that show representing the UK. And then I got...
So there's like international schools will have this competition. And it's kind of not for credit per se. But you can get recognition for doing it.
I think that depends on university, yeah.
Right.
I didn't get recognition.
Okay, well, yeah.
But what were, like, the events? Then, like, is it, like, educational?
So then they can promote somebody to do this, like, this big televised competition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then at the end of it, if you do well enough, then the Chinese government gives you a scholarship to study in China, and, yeah, that's basically
it. Is this, like, Chinese trivia? Is it?
No, so it's, I mean...
Is it obstacle courses?
No, nominally, it's like in name, it's a language competition,
yeah.
But it's not. So for Hunan TV, it's it's supposed to be about language and then a bit of culture and whatever, but it's Hunan TV, it's an entertainment show.
From the ones that I've seen, sort of on a small scale, it's very, very theatrical. It's usually like you give like a certain type of speech as a performance, or... You do calligraphy, or for extra credit, you can do Tai Chi and calligraphy simultaneously. You can do Chinese dance, you can do like martial arts, it's like a million different things. It's kind of just for Chinese judges and teachers to decide which of the foreigners is the most Chinese.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so there's language. So
it's like a talent show-ish. Like you do a routine or something.
You have to have Chinese language and you have to have talent.
Okay. I was picturing you guys like behind desks, like with buzzers or something.
No.
Like a game show.
It's not like a spelling bee.
Yeah.
Well, no, so I was like. So the competition for people studying Chinese in China is like that. It's done on CCTV. So it's very like formal and kind of budget, not as. But that the Hunan, because it's Hunan TV.
It's much more entertaining.
And then they'll bring on like some famous actor and you have to like act out a thing with this actor and then like wearing some like, yeah. So it basically comes down to like language skills, a talent.
Mm-hmm.
And my talent was, because I don't have a talent, so my talent was like
how Chinese
comedy,
your talent
like, my talent was like oral stuff, like stand-up comedy and like xiangsheng. And then what else? And then also a bit of Chinese trivia. Anyway, so I was in that competition representing the UK. There were three or four English representatives. And then I got second place, and I also got the Internet Popularity Award.
Oh.
So that kind of gave me a tiny, tiny bit of a bit of a profile,
mm-hmm.
which meant this show knew about me. I also did some other things. But anyway, they got in contact with me, and yeah, and they like asked me to come on their show. As the British representative for this show.
Yeah.
So this show, which I'm doing now, which I've been doing for 2-3 years now, is they have guys from 10-11 different countries who all speak Chinese,
mm-hmm.
and then we it's shown every week. We discuss different topics. So we'll talk about marriage, for example, and then everyone will talk. The Egyptian guy will talk about, in Chinese, of course,
mm-hmm.
what marriage is like in Egypt, if they have any like interesting sayings or whatever about marriage.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about that, and then we'll debate, and then we'll have... we'll do a skit, and then we'll, yeah, it'll be, yeah.
Do you is it very opinionated, or do you have to, like, write material and, like...
It's a bit of both. So, some of the stuff we talk about is personal, so they'll talk about our personal experiences
mm-hmm.
of something. Sometimes we'll just talk about a custom or a tradition from our country,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting thing to talk about. And then we do have debates.
So this role has garnered you some... fans and internet fame, I assume.
Yeah, quite a bit. So, So I just broke 180,000 fans on Weibo, which in Chinese terms, China has a big population.
Yeah.
That's just like a drop.
Yeah.
It's nothing. But no, I'm very happy. Like, we fans are really supportive and really sweet, and they, yeah. So I have a very good, I have a very good relationship with them. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get run-ins in real life of people recognizing you?
Yeah, occasionally. Let me think. There's a girl who works here actually who asked for a photo with me. She said apparently she told someone else that she's been a fan of mine for like 5 years, which I thought was very cute because like 5 years ago not that many people knew about me. So I like it. Chinese TV is fun.
One time we were in the elevator together at the office and you were recognized by another guy that worked here.
Yeah.
And he said, excuse me. And looked at me.
Yeah,
in Chinese. Looked straight at me. Yeah, in Chinese. And he said, is that the guy from that show? To me, even though the show is completely in Chinese, and you obviously can speak.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it happens sometimes. It's a good platform, especially for... So we have a Nigerian guy on the show, and a lot of people have said that before the show, they didn't know much about Black people, about Africans, and through the show they've been able to learn more about it and kind of see, especially he's not stereotypical in that he's very camp, extremely camp, whereas most people, I think they don't think of, most especially how they don't think of Africans as being quite that camp.
Mm-hmm.
He is very camp. So it's kind of breaking down barriers.
Yeah.
That's cool. Now you've been doing it for quite a while now, but what was your reaction to kind of having this first like fan response and getting fan art and gifts sent to you? And
I kind of did some TV before this, but I didn't have the same kind of fan base because at this show it's very frequent. It shows every week for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people who've who've really, really have been following it for like 2 years now. Like you said, so now I do get fan mail and I get fan gifts. It's really sweet. I get a lot of because a lot of the fans are young girls, so I get a lot of things which they really like and appreciate and that they think that I would like, which is really sweet. So I get a lot of teddy bears, I try and find a good home for them.
Yeah.
What do you do with them?
Well, as a 20-year-old guy, I don't think I can have that many teddy bears in my home. So at the moment,
do you give them to all your Tinder dates?
No. I think...
Just a big drawer, really.
Just send them home in the morning with them.
I think I'll have to give some...
Gift bags.
Gift bags.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that Derek Jeter used to do that?
Yeah.
Send girls home in the morning with an autographed baseball.
He has like a whole gift bag. Derek Jeter is like a famous baseball player.
But oh my gosh.
Like, apparently like used to have just like gift bags that were like a mix of like nice nice things and then like like Yankees stuff, and it would just be like, oh thanks, and like send them off with a gift bag after after the night.
Do they have like a uniform? Would you give them like shirts? So when
I don't know, I'm sure you gave them like a t-shirt and signed baseball and probably something with diamonds. I don't know.
I wonder if it's like a silent kind of like keep silent. This is.
I'm sure part of it is.
I don't know. Yeah, well, I'm not quite there yet.
But he's very clean cut guy. So
what do you do with them?
At the moment, they're in my apartment.
Yeah.
So I have like a big pile of teddy bears, loads of teddy bears, and then I also get a lot of artwork, which is actually which is also like it's all nice. Some of it is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they like to give me kind of traditional Chinese kind of artwork that they've done because to kind of show me a bit of Chinese culture or Chinese arts.
That's cool.
And then sometimes it's really sweet. So at the end of this month, I'm going back to the UK to visit family and stuff. And they know that I'm seeing my nieces and my mom. So they've given me some stuff to give to my nieces and some stuff to give to my mom, which is very sweet.
Does that ever get kind of strange that they like know these? It's kind of like, how do you know these things? I mean, like, I'd assume it's like you know, casually mention it here or there, like on Weibo or even on the show.
Yeah.
Without kind of realizing, like.
Well, they've done this.
Now 100,000 girls know your and where you're going.
They've done this thing called, the Alec College, where they wrote a kind of an exam paper with all these questions about things I've said or shows that I've been on and, like, facts about me or stuff like that. Just, like, loads of, like, trivia questions about me.
Is it the fans or the show?
This is the fans.
Yeah.
They made this, like, an exam kind of thing. And then they send it to each other and then they spread it out to see who could get, like, the highest score and stuff. And I looked at it and
you ever
saw,
secretly
like,
take it, see how high your score is?
No, I gave up. I looked at it and, like, half of these things.
What did I miss?
Well, half of them, I'm serious, like, I don't know. Yeah. I really don't remember. It'll be things like, what episode did Alex say this in?
Yeah.
Or it'll be like, I can't even remember, like, what colored shirt was he wearing in this show? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I really don't know.
I always think about that, like, people who are, like, especially...
You can't be part of the fan club!
Nowadays, like, there's so many shows or movies that have such, like, fan bases behind them. And it's like, it must be so much pressure to be on, like, part of, like, a comic book movie or, like, any of these fan things where it's like, in that one episode where you did this, like, oh, no, man, we've done 500 episodes.
Yeah.
You're killing me.
No, seriously. But it's very touching.
Yeah.
So.
That's wild. Yeah. I knew a kid who was on a dating show. I might have told you this story before, but he was on this dating show called Fatal and Raw.
Okay.
It's like brutal. It's a brutal show. Like, basically, a guy walks out, and there's he stands in the middle of, like, these, how many girls is it? Like 20?
Something like that. It's
a lot
of girls.
So each of the girls has a podium with a light on it. And then as they lose interest, they can turn their light off.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see in
it's
real time.
It's basically X Factor for dating.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, for example, like they have these, like, various video spots introducing the guy. You know, one is about his hobbies, one is about his job, one is about, you know, his family, et cetera, et cetera. And so, for example, you'll have, like, a guy talking about career, and he's like, I don't really make time for, you know, leisure, like, on the weekends, like, I do overtime, like, I don't bother, like, trying to relax. And then it'll be like, ding, 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 ding. they're all, like, over it. So, this kid, he was, very, either just out of college or, still in college, but, very, like, average, American kid. Not, GQ type by any stretch of the imagination. As soon as he walks out, half the lights go out.
Aww.
And then they interview girls to ask why they turn the lights off, and one of them just cites his head shape. So after that, I guess the TV network sets up an email account for you so that people can get in touch. Most of the time, for foreigners on the show, it's like parents reaching out to see if you'll marry their daughter.
Really?
Yeah. Very much like
just for foreigners?
Market. Yeah.
Wow. Why do the parents don't message Chinese people?
I mean, I'm sure they do,
but they see them. It's just exposure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like, this guy had never had a job or anything like that. They just wanted him to meet their daughter. After that, he started, like, getting a million dates. Just, like, every single weekend was, like, a different girl. And he was, like, in, like, in a smaller city at the time, and, like, they would go travel to meet him. He would, like, go to different cities to meet them.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I went out to for his going away party, and this...
it's like a bevy of, a harem of beautiful girls.
Well, one in particular was, like, you can't leave China without seeing me. So, bought a ticket to see him without telling him. Just assumed that she would stay in his house and they would be together forever.
Had they met before?
They met before, yeah. They went out a couple times, but she was from a different city, so it wasn't a very serious, committed thing. So she was staying with him for the weekend, and before introducing us, he goes, she has this tattoo, don't ask about it. So, of course, it's like, oh, my God, like, I need to know exactly what it is. I need to know where it's from. I need to know everything about it.
So she comes in, you're, like, looking, searching for the tattoo.
Oh, it's not difficult to find.
Like, how can I get her to mention this?
So along her forearm, Well, first of all, it's like quite unusual for Chinese girls to have that many tattoos. Mm. So there's like, there was quite a prominent one on her shoulder. It was like, I don't know, something like koi fish or something. And then it had English names around it. And it was supposed to be a tribute to her ex-boyfriend. But the weird thing about it was it wasn't their actual Chinese names. It was their English names. Mm. So already it's kind of like, oh, okay, so she has like this persona, like she wants to be this person. Mm. She had like really bright colored hair and then like, I don't know, like leopard print everything. So yeah, along her forearm though, in old English font is... I want to suck your big dick, Manhattan. What? So the goal of the entire weekend became getting a picture of this fucking tattoo. So if you ask her about it, her explanation is she likes New York. Basically, she just ended up
being... She wants to show her love for New York.
I just want to know who Manhattan is. I want to meet this guy.
Side note, when we were in New York, we told a friend of ours who was a bartender that story, which he then told... a drunk patron who is this older gentleman that I want to suck your big dick Manhattan is how you say hello Manhattan in Chinese, and he completely believed him and said for the whole weekend this drunk guy is like a barfly there just going around telling people that like that's how you say things in Chinese.
That doesn't make sense in any way.
No, that's why he was like he bought it. I don't know how, but it was amazing.
Yeah, oh by gosh. The end of the weekend she was like, I'm going to kill you and then I'm going to kill myself. She would, like, put out cigarettes, like, on her arm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, TV stardom. Yeah. It's like a double-edged sword.
But you seem to be quite humble about it.
Well, I'm a humble guy.
I've heard you're the most humble.
That's what they say.
Would you say you're the most popular guy on the show?
Yeah.
Yeah?
No.
Do you have competitions with everyone?
No, I'm... yeah, like, the Russian guy is very popular.
Suck it, Egypt. I'm at 180,000.
I think there's a bit of natural competition, yeah. But I mean...
especially because you all represent a country. Like, even though it's, like, it doesn't matter that much, it's still, like, just another factor I feel like you could use. As like
kind of, yeah. I mean, but it's nice because we're all very different, we all attract completely different types of people. So... you know, some girls are like the intelligent types they're going for, you know, blah, blah, blah. Some girls like the whatever type. Some girls just like an all-round guy, so they come to me, you know? I mean, who's the most popular? I'm okay. The Australian guy's popular. The Argentinian guy's popular. Mm. The Russian guy, he's 18. Handsome guy. He's very popular. So yeah, I mean, we've been on 3 seasons now. I've been in all 3 seasons. Like, a few of us have been on all 3 seasons.
And most of the guys are fairly young. Like in their 20s or teens.
The youngest is 18, but most of us are around our mid-late 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good age. I'm actually veering towards the top.
No big deal. Yeah. Maybe you should start requesting your fans to send you something that you'll... actually use regularly.
I've heard
like
that
protein powder.
I've heard that before from people who like somewhat like celebrities. They'll be like, oh, in some interview I mentioned like Reese's Pieces were my favorite candy, so yeah. For a year I just got tons of them and now I'm sick of them.
Well, yeah, so I said that I love mango, which is true. And I mean, people don't sell mangoes, but I did get a bunch of like mango flavored candy and mango flavored stuff. Oh, and I've said that I like sweet stuff previously, so I get a lot of candy, so much candy. I like teddy bears. And then I had to ask people, I'd say, I can't like, I don't, you know, I couldn't eat as much candy in one lifetime. So, like, just hold down on the candy. And, like, if I do, then I'm just going to get super, super fat and unhealthy.
You did this. You all did this.
You created me. There's a bit of all of you in me right now.
Well, these are some great stories, Alec, and thank you for coming. And hopefully we can siphon off some of these fans of yours.
Well, we'll get a
big female Chinese following.
I'm sure there's a market for this. People want to practice their English.
Yeah. I think that'd be
great. Hear interesting stories.
I know my teacher already said she would start listening for that.
Cool.
Oh.
Right. I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Is it the chain on my neck or the watch in my wrist? Maybe the ice in my ear or the bracelet. But she look like the type that can take a dick. Young Gucci Mane. Don't kiss me, baby, you can kiss my chains. You gotta be a dime piece just to look at the rocks in my timepiece. I come through when I drop top jacks. An old school Chevy with the antique tag.